What's Universal Time? Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. Pressure is building on the regional government of Spain's Catalonia region not to declare independence. Catalan President Carles Puigdemont is set to address his regional parliament Tuesday. France and Germany Monday expressed support for continued unity. Spain's Deputy Prime Minister Soraya Sáenz de Santamaría said Madrid is ready to act if independence is declared. She warned Puigdemont not to, in her words, jump into a void. Even Xavier García Albiol, president of the People's Party of Catalonia, expressed concern Monday. He said the only thing we can hope for is for Puigdemont to publicly renounce the process of rupture, of splitting Catalonia from Spain. And there was a warning from the president of the Institute of Economic Studies in Madrid, José Luis Feito.
The main consequences of this push, of these illegal actions on behalf of independence, will be mainly felt on the economy of Catalonia. There will be a redistribution of wealth, of public revenues, out of Catalonia into the rest of Spain.
An overwhelming percentage of those who voted in the region's independence referendum October 1st voted yes. The Spanish government declared the vote illegal. Police in Kenya's capital and elsewhere fired tear gas and fired shots in the air as hundreds marched demanding personnel changes in the electoral board. Protesters, including opposition parliamentarian Gladys Wanga, accused the election board of declaring President Uhuru Kenyatta winner despite widespread irregularities.
We shall not take police brutality lying down, and we shall not retreat, neither shall we surrender until Chiloba and his cohorts go.
The Supreme Court ruled the August 8 ballot illegal. A new election is scheduled October 26. This is VOA News. Turkey has called on the U.S. to review its suspension of visa services after the arrest of a Turkish employee at the U.S. consulate in Istanbul, who allegedly had links with exiled Muslim cleric Fethullah Gulen, accused by Ankara of orchestrating last year's failed coup. It's a charge he denies. U.S. Ambassador John Bass said the U.S. awaits formal charges.
Last week, for the second time this year, a Turkish staff member of our diplomatic mission was arrested by Turkish authorities. Despite our best efforts to learn the reasons for this arrest, we have been unable to determine why it occurred or what, if any, evidence exists against the employee.
Turkey has since taken similar measures against U.S. citizens seeking visas to Turkey. President Recep Tayyip Erdogan described the U.S. action as upsetting. The dispute has alarmed investors, with the value of the Turkish lira falling along with its main stock index. Germany has expressed concern over President Donald Trump's pending decision whether or not to certify Iran as complying with the 2015 International Nuclear Agreement. Foreign Minister Sigmar Gabriel said Berlin is prepared to change Iran's behavior amid reports Mr. Trump will decertify Iran's compliance. Hussein Binai is an Iranian analyst at Indiana University.
Basically, the objections of the administration have exclusively to do with Iran's missile program that they deem to have violated the spirit of the deal.
Binai said Germany has economic leverage on Iran. Meanwhile, the head of the UN Atomic Watchdog Agency affirmed Monday that Iran is fully complying with terms of the deal. U.S.-backed Syrian rebels said they are preparing for the final assault to retake the northern Syrian city of Raqqa from Islamic State. Mustafa Bali of the Kurdish-led Syrian Democratic Forces told the Associated Press the battle is expected to last up to 10 days. He estimated IS has hundreds of fighters still in the city, once considered the de facto capital of an IS caliphate that once crossed Syria and Iraqi territory. In Nigeria, the government has started a mass trial of more than 1,600 people suspected of ties to the Sunni insurgency, Boko Haram. The closed-door legal proceedings are being held at the Kainji Detention Facility in central Niger State. It is presided over by four judges. The insurgency has left over 20,000 dead since 2009. A Sarajevo court has acquitted Nasser Oric, Muslim commander of Srebrenica, accused of atrocities against Serbs during the Bosnian conflict. The decision resulted in outrage in the Serb community. A panel of judges ruled the prosecution did not present sufficient evidence. U.S. stocks fell Monday from record highs after medical device maker Medtronic warned its operations in Puerto Rico were hurt by Hurricane Maria. Still, the benchmark Dow barely fell, shedding a fraction of a point to 22,761. I'm Victor Beatty.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, October 10th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Today is the day of reckoning as Liberians go to the polls to choose a new president and 73 members of the House of Representatives.
At the moment, as voters go to the polls, there were at least four or five leading candidates in the race. If one of them surprisingly win the first round, which all indication points to being impossible, then there will be a real shocker in this election.
Rodney Sia is managing editor of Front Page Africa, Liberia's leading online and print news magazine. A Kenyan rights group is welcoming a high court decision on the country's October 26 presidential election rerun. Ugandan President Museveni vows to eliminate corruption, and Zimbabwe's president reshuffles his cabinet, saying as a slap to Vice President Mnangagwa.
There are some amongst us who, although they were given positions, did they live up to the calling of those positions? Next week, there might be some changes.
That's Zimbabwe President Robert Mugabe. An international mining company loses a license in Senegal, and global unemployment rises to more than 200 million in 2017. Those stories plus our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. After a year of campaigning that included hundreds of political rallies, Liberians are voting today to choose a successor to President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf. The country is also electing 73 members of the House of Representatives. Polls opened at 8 o'clock this morning, but already some voters were seen Monday lining up stones near polling centers to mark their positions. Rodney Sears, managing editor of Front Page Africa, Liberia's leading online and print news magazine, he says, "It would be a miracle if one of the leading five presidential candidates out of a total of 20 could win on the first round."
Well, the money out there is putting it on a runoff. We have 20 candidates running for president. And at the moment, as voters go to the polls, there were at least four or five leading candidates in the race. Obviously, the incumbent vice president, Joseph Boakai, football legend George Weah, Mr. Alexander Cummings, Charles Brumsmith, and Benjamin Yuri. So those are the five candidates that are considered to be the major candidates in this election. But most likely, we will come down to at least two of them. Once voters go to the polls today, and in the next couple of days, we'll know which one of these five candidates will be the top two. If one of them surprisingly win the first round, which all indication points to being impossible, then there will be a real shocker in this election.
Rodney, President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf Monday addressed the nation and described today's vote as historic and one that is intended to, what she called, consolidate Liberia's young democracy. Do you think that she sees this election as a referendum on her 12 years in power, considering that many of the leading candidates have been talking about the need for change?
I think it is. And I think after the war, she led this country out of the Civil War, and she considered to be the one who stabilized the peace. She's leaving a country that is making a transition from war to peace and on the verge of a successful transition from one government to the next. So that in itself, I think, is a successful legacy or accomplishment. So I think she wants to ensure that she steered a ship that was successful, that made a smooth transition without any violence. I think that will be a major accomplishment for her as she steps down in January.
The President Rodney also made a plea for all candidates to respect the outcome of today's vote. I must say that during my 2 weeks in Liberia, there was this concern that supporters of some candidates were stoking fear of possible violence. Where are we now as Liberians vote today?
Well, the international community has been very, very vocal about the need for this election to be free, fair, and transparent, and free of violence. And so I think the message is sinking in. I think everyone is on the lookout for any strange activity. The security people are all also involved. The Minister of Justice spoke about it. The head of the United Nations mission in Liberia spoke about it. The Carter Center, the National Democratic Institute, they all have been pushing this line about free, fair, transparent, and a violent free election. So I think those parties that are, you know, participating, they know that as the UN Special Representative Tadira said in a statement yesterday, on Sunday actually, he said that there are legal channels that one can take if they are unhappy with the results. And everyone's hoping that those parties that feel aggrieved will go through the legal route and not resort to violence.
Rodney, thank you very much again for speaking with us.
Okay, James.
Rodney Sears, managing editor of Front Page Africa, Liberia's leading online and print news magazine. He was speaking with us from Ganta City, Nimba County. The leader of Kenyans for Democracy and Justice, a non-governmental pressure group, has welcomed a high court ruling dismissing a petition which seeks to prevent the country's elections officials from organizing the October 26 presidential election rerun. Meanwhile, incumbent President Uhuru Kenyatta says main rival and former Prime Minister Raila Odinga can withdraw from the upcoming poll as soon as possible. In response, Odinga says participating in the election is entirely his choice. This as the court gave Odinga 4 days to respond to a petition that seeks to compel him to participate in the election. Okia Mtata, leader of Kenyans for Democracy and Justice, tells viewers Peter Clotty that there is need for credibility in the presidential election rerun.
Well, I think the petition will not frame a good petition because the court cannot really micromanage the IEBC, and I don't think the petition was well thought out. I think the court was right to dismiss it, but that doesn't mean that the court said there's no problem with the IEBC rectifying or upping up its game so that we don't go through the same charade as last time.
Do Kenyans have confidence in the ability of the IEBC to organize free, fair, transparent, and credible elections?
I don't speak for Kenyans personally, but I personally do not think that I could have the confidence to say that the way the IEBC is going about the business of conducting elections is acceptable, because they have been found culpable and they are still pandering to one side of the political divide, which is trying to make sure that it gets an unfair advantage. Because somebody must be held accountable. If nobody is held accountable, then why did the Supreme Court have to announce elections? You cannot do the same thing the same way, expecting the same result. The other thing is that the country lost a lot of money. And if you look at the Kenyan constitution, if you look at 226 clause 5, it very clearly states that people who result in the loss of public money must be held accountable for that loss. And so you would wonder that to continue to conduct this business without all care in the world, after they have been found to have not conducted the election according to the constitution of Kenya. So those who are responsible must be punished. Otherwise, we are just fooling ourselves. And so they do not have the moral authority to conduct any elections right now. They are just individuals. The institution, yes, but the secretariat does not.
The opposition supporters have been protesting against the IEBC. Some are saying this is meant to put pressure on them. Is this a fair assessment of what is going on? Because others from the Jubilee are saying that it is unfair and undermines the credibility of the IEBC to administer the upcoming presidential rerun.
The IEBC needs to up its game. There is no credibility at all to conduct the election, and not the way it is constituted. Because what happened, the thing you realize is that technology never fails, except when it encounters either sabotage, which it encounters incompetence, and when it encounters negligence. Now, of all these three things, are things that cannot be excusable. If there's ignorance in the IEBC in terms of conducting a digital election, then there's no business conducting a digital election. If there is ignorance in the IEBC, then there's no business conducting elections. If there is
President Uhuru Kenyatta has said a number of times that if Raila Odinga, the opposition leader and former prime minister and leader of the NASA coalition, feels he doesn't want to participate in the upcoming presidential rerun, he should just boycott it. Now, is this a good thing to say? Because his decision not to participate in the election could create possible tension and violence in Kenya.
We must have an credible election. And a credible election is an election according to the Supreme Court, which is conducted strictly according to the constitution and the laws of Kenya. If you don't have an election that is conducted according to the laws of Kenya, then that's not an election.
Okiya Mtata is the leader of Kenyans for Democracy and Justice. He spoke with U.S. Peter Clotty from the capital, Nairobi. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, October 10th. And please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is 15 minutes past the hour. President Robert Mugabe clipped the wings of Vice President Emmerson Mnangagwa in a cabinet reshuffle yesterday, in which the Justice Ministry was removed from under the control of the Vice President. Mr. Mugabe also removed some of the Vice President's lieutenants from powerful ministerial positions. Douglas Mahia, a spokesperson for the Zimbabwe National Liberation War Veterans Association, which wants Vice President Mnangagwa to succeed President Mugabe.
There are some amongst us who, although they were given positions, did they live up to the calling of those positions? The next week, there might be some changes.
That is President Robert Mugabe speaking to his ZANU-PF supporters on Saturday. And for sure, late Monday, the 93-year-old leader released a statement which had 18 new appointments. Emmerson Mnangagwa retained his vice presidency but lost his justice ministry portfolio. That was largely expected as he has lost favor of Mugabe. Mugabe accuses Mnangagwa of plotting to take over while he is still in charge of Zimbabwe. Most of Mnangagwa's allies lost their posts or were reassigned to less influential portfolios, such as, quote, Minister of Cybersecurity, Threat Detection and Mitigation, unquote, for former Finance Minister Patrick Chinamasa. Here is Rejoice Ngwenya, an independent analyst, commenting on Mugabe's reshuffle.
This is a totally valueless exercise, creating ministries for internet and WhatsApp and regulating. I think really it shows that Mugabe is totally run out of ideas. What it has simply done is to create some opportunity for his henchmen like Chombo to control ministries where public funds can be channeled into the electoral campaign.
That was a reference to Zimbabwe's new finance minister, Ignatius Chombo, whom Ngwenya said would be used by President Mugabe to ensure public funds are used by ruling ZANU-PF party to campaign for next year's elections. Ngwenya said Vice President Emmerson Mnangagwa, who lost his justice ministry, would one day bounce back despite his allies having suffered a lot in the Monday cabinet reshuffle. Another analyst, Alexander Rusero, comments on Vice President Mnangagwa's political career.
I am sure it's too early to write a script where we say this is the obituary of Mnangagwa, because a day is long in politics. But what Mnangagwa should do is to come out from the cocoon and fight for his space, fight for his voice, because I am sure Mnangagwa has realized that quiet diplomacy is very costly in ZANU-PF. So he also must have his voice on top to defend his position, otherwise he won't survive for long.
For now, he has survived, but not so lucky were members of his faction, which has come under fire from another one led by First Lady Grace Mugabe in angling to take over from President Mugabe, who has ruled Zimbabwe since 1980. The succession debates have gone on for long, resulting in the government putting less effort on the country's ailing economy, manifesting itself in a cash shortages, unemployment rate at more than 86%, and largely relying on imports. Now it remains to be seen if the new cabinet announced by President Mugabe late Monday would address Zimbabwe's moribund economy. Sebastian Mofu for VOA News, Harare.
Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni has vowed to work on eliminating corruption from the country. The president says corruption increases poverty and lack of services in the country. Museveni is also calling on politicians to practice what he called modern political tendencies such as tolerance. Mugumi David Rakarinch reports from Harare.
Mr. Museveni was yesterday, Monday,
Addressing the gathering, as Uganda commemorated its 55th independence anniversary in the Western District of Bushenyi.
This disorder must stop. From now on, permanent secretaries will be held accountable for their inaction against undisciplined officers. You must have heard of the measures I took against a number of public servants. A few are in the courts of law, and some have been dismissed. This is just a taste of things to come. Anybody who sees somebody asking for a bribe should ring certain telephone numbers that will be advertised by my office on the radios and TVs.
Mr. Museveni also says as the country commemorates independence, people must also work towards eradicating poverty. He says that is the true independence and the only way towards attaining a middle income status.
Everyone knows that the only way out of poverty for any individual or society is through hard work. Unfortunately, many people do not take their jobs and businesses very seriously. Many people in Uganda behave like a foolish hired shepherd who does not pay attention to livestock under their care, yet looking after these livestock well is their source of livelihood and actual survival. During my tours around the country, I've often seen young men seated in the trading centers early in the morning playing omweso and karata matatu.
Without making elaborations, President Museveni also criticized the recent chaos at the parliament, saying it is against democratic principles.
Democracy is about the harmonious coexistence of contending views. A democrat is therefore a person who disagrees with a view, but at the same time defends the right of someone to express the view he or she does not agree with. However, in the recent past, I've seen people who, for a long time, have claimed to be Democrats, attempt to violate the right of freedom of expression of the people they don't agree with. This intolerance is not what we fought for, and it will therefore be resisted in the strongest terms possible.
Last month, parliamentarians exchanged blows as they debated a constitution clause that intends to remove the age limit requirement for one standing for the presidency. Uganda's constitution requires a person standing for presidency to be between 35 to 75 years of age. Those opposed the amendment claim it is meant to render President Museveni, who has been in power since 1986, a chance to contest for presidency yet again. Museveni will be 76 years in 2021 and eligible to contest if the constitution is not amended. President Museveni has not come out to accept or deny if he will contest for the presidency in 2021. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Ruakarinj in Kampala, Uganda.
According to reports in Senegalese newspapers, a mining license that was the source of a battle between the people of southern Senegal and an international mining company, Astron, has been revoked. The license would have allowed Zaire-Coma mining to begin in near Farang in Senegal. Local residents fought for years to stop the mine, saying it would damage the environment. Luc Descroches, a senior scientist with the French Institute for Research and Development, tells Ricky Schreier what hazards it would have posed.
There is two kinds of problems. A hydrologic problem about the water table and a sedimentologic problem about the barrier beach, the dune, which are in the edge of the sea. One of the dunes is the location of the zirconium mine.
As I understand, were to go ahead, the salt water of the sea would more or less invade the surrounding environment, ruining rice fields and more. Was that the case?
The main problem is the risk, the hazard of intrusion of salted water in the continent. Because there is sweet water in small water in all villages of the coastal Casamance. The fact to exploit the sandy mountains, the dune, will expose the water, the sweet water table, to the entry of salt. And there is another problem, a sedimentologic problem, because the exploitation of the sand, the heavy metals in the sandy deposit, in the dunes, will make treat for the mangrove and the rice farming, which are in the continent, near the coast, but the plains, the coastal plains. The protection, the natural protection they have will be destructed or strongly fragilized.
As of now, local news sources are saying the license has been pulled from the company and they will no longer be allowed to do this site.
Currently, the situation is that the press and some rumors said that the license was by the government, but for the moment there was no confirmation from the same government. There is a lot of a newspaper which said that, and I had a confirmation by members of the current Senegalese government.
That was Luc Decroix, a senior scientist with the French Institute for Research for Development. He was speaking to Ricky Stryak from Dakar, Senegal. The International Labour Organization is urging private enterprises to invest more in workers and promote innovation to stem rising joblessness around the world. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva from the launch of the ILO's report entitled World Employment and Social Outlook 2017, Sustainable Enterprises and Jobs.
Global unemployment this year stands at more than 201 million. This, says the International Labour Organization, is an increase of 3.4 million compared to 2016. The ILO study reports private businesses account for nearly 3 billion workers, or 87% of total global employment. It says a strong public sector is the foundation for growth, job creation, and poverty reduction. Deborah Greenfield is the ILO Deputy Director General for Policy. Greenfield says investing in workers is a key to sustainability. She also says providing formal training for permanent employees results in higher wages, higher productivity, and lower unit labor costs. Greenfield says temporary workers are at a disadvantage.
But intensified use of temporary employment is associated with lower wages and lower productivity without achieving any gains in unit labor costs. The report also finds that on-the-job training is an important driver of innovation. Since temporary workers are rarely offered training, this might also affect innovation in firms in a negative way.
The ILO report says in some cases, innovation has led to the hiring of more temporary workers, mainly women. It notes, however, that while this might be beneficial in the short term, long term, it depresses wages and leads to lower productivity because of the instability of temporary work and lack of benefits. The report, however, finds innovation increases competitiveness and job creation for enterprises. It says innovative firms tend to be more productive, employ more educated workers, offer more training, and hire more female workers. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. After a year of campaigning that included hundreds of political rallies, Liberians are voting today to choose a successor to President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf. The country is also electing 73 members of the House of Representatives. Polls opened at 8 this morning. That's it for this Tuesday, October 10th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with all of our engineers, I'm James Botti in Washington wishing you a lovely day.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there. Bringing you news as it happens. Listen to Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our five-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, a look at the Grace Hopper celebration. The conference is the world's largest gathering of women in technology. We'll recap the events in Orlando, Florida, and speak with African women working in the industry in Washington, D.C. and elsewhere for their perspective on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.